Today on the 21st show, it's been 3 years since Illinois State University grad student Jelani Day went missing and was later found dead. His family still doesn't know what happened. We'll talk about that with his mother and sister, and we'll have a broader conversation about how the authorities and the media respond when the people who go missing are black. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's coming up today on the 21st show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WCBU in Peoria, WNIJ in DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. Jelani Day was a 25-year-old athlete, scholar, and son who called his mom every day. He was part of a large family from Danville, Illinois, the fourth of five children. In 2021, he was pursuing a graduate degree in speech pathology at Illinois State University with dreams of one day becoming a doctor. But on August 24th, 3 years ago this past Saturday, he disappeared. Jelani had last been seen at a store in Bloomington. 2 days later, his car was found hidden in the woods near Peru, Illinois, about an hour north of ISU in Bloomington Normal.
Loved ones and supporters of Illinois State University graduate student Jelani Day are once again taking to the streets calling for justice.
Please, all I'm asking, I just need information on my son.
Something is wrong in the city of Bloomington,
yeah.
And we're going to figure it out, and we're going to get justice Jelani.
I think today was well needed for a lot of us. It has been a very drawn-out process. I know we wanted to keep believing that we was going to get a positive outcome, and I still believe we're going to get a positive outcome despite of what may happen. Jelani was always the light of the room.
Eleven days after he went missing, Jelani's remains were recovered from the Illinois River. How and why he vanished is still a mystery. And for his family, it's a tragedy. And for many black Americans, it's an all too familiar story. We're joined today by Jelani's oldest sister, Dakara Bolden. Dakara, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And we are also joined today by Derica Wilson, co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation, a group that aims to raise awareness of missing people from groups that typically don't get wall-to-wall media coverage. It also provides resources to the families of the missing. Derica, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Dakara, I want to begin with you. Tell us about your brother. What was he like in life?
Jelani was somebody that would always catch your eye. Jelani was super nice, very loud, but very intriguing, friendly to anyone, anywhere, just a great person, just overall. And my brother had so many dreams and aspirations in life. He was going places. He was just very positive, just very, very much wanting to live and just, you know, be the great person that he is.
You're an older sister, I understand?
And yes, I'm the oldest, yes.
Okay, so five kids overall. What was that like? What was that family dynamic like?
In hindsight, it was so fun. It was so fun. Now that I look back on it, having so many siblings, there was always something going on. We always had somebody to talk to or play with or even argue with. It was just so much love in our family growing up. It just always has been that way.
So Jelani was at Illinois State University. He was studying speech pathology. Why was that important to him?
Jelani chose that major. Growing up, he had a friend. I don't know if you heard a story about, his name is Paul, and Paul had a speech impediment. And Jelani was one of Paul's friends that would always stand up for him when people used to either make fun of Paul or mess with him with the way that he spoke. And that's always stuck with Jelani, even to when he got older. And that is the reason why he chose speech pathology, to help people talk and to give voices for those who couldn't speak for themselves.
So I mentioned a bit of the timeline earlier of his case. I understand there are some new developments regarding his recovered iPhone and clothing. I wonder what you can tell us about that.
So in regards to the clothing, my mother had did a live and she spoke on this. The clothing were found and we were able to make contact with the two young ladies that found the clothing. The new developments were the discrepancies in the messages that we received from the police versus what the young ladies had told us. According to the police, when the ladies had found the clothing, the ladies did not want to speak with us and they automatically lawyered up out of fear of being harassed for whatever reason. But when my mother met with the two young ladies, they were very much saying that they never refused to talk to us, that they wanted to talk to us from the very beginning.
Can you talk about what is the latest that you and your family have heard from the police in Peru, Illinois?
We have not heard anything from them. They have not been speaking with my mother, or the task force has not been meeting with my mother, how they were supposed to have our monthly meetings. They have not been corresponding with her at all. And the contact has really been none. The last thing we saw about them, it was actually a message online before we did the march in DC of last year. They had put a news article out that they were no longer working on the case until they get any leads. But we have not heard anything from the Palouse Police Department, LaSalle Police Department, or Bloomington. We have heard nothing.
Let me remind people you're listening to the 21st show. We're talking about the disappearance of Illinois State University student Jelani Day. It was 3 years ago this week, and we are talking with his sister, Dakara Bolden. There was some nationwide coverage of Jelani's disappearance back in 2021. It took weeks. There was a comparison made at the time. This young white woman named Gabby Petito, who was reported missing and later found killed, that made national news within 48 hours of her disappearance. I wonder if you can talk about how difficult it's been to keep Jelani's name in public awareness.
It's been difficult because not only are we trying to make sure Jelani's name stay out there for public awareness, we're also dealing with the grief at the same time. So that has been a struggle on how to learn to live with this while still working to fight for justice every day. During that time when my brother had went missing, I believe Jelani went missing probably about 2 weeks before Gabby Petito had went missing. And although I do believe that her family should have got all the attention that they garnered for her, she deserved all of that. We just believe that my brother deserved just as much as attention as her as well. It has been a struggle trying to get Jelani's name out there on these public platforms. And it's just been that way, you know, from the beginning. We have a little bit of news coverage, but it just was never enough and it never equal to the amount that Gabby received at that time. And we kind of felt very much slighted and very much pushed to the back as if my brother wasn't as important as her. For whatever reason, we don't understand. You know, Jelani was a good kid. Jelani was in college to get his master's. He wasn't involved in any gangs my brother's never been to jail. You know, Jelani was a good kid and it was just like they were focusing on trying to find things out about him versus looking for him. We just wanted the same attention that she was getting at that time and we did not receive that.
Derricka Wilson, co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation. I want to bring you into the conversation now. I take it this is a familiar story to you. Talk about that. Why is it so hard to get media attention on Black people who go missing?
It absolutely is a familiar story with Jelani Day's family. There's so many Jelani Days out there. And sadly, when it comes to law enforcement and people of color, it really isn't a sense of urgency. They're not dedicating the resources. They're not responding immediately. In fact, when it comes to our children, they like to classify their disappearance as runaways, and runaways, they're not meeting the criteria for an Amber Alert. And when it comes to adults, we're not seen as valuable members of our community. They look at us as criminals, as thugs, and that is so far from the truth. What they need to understand is that these are sons, daughters, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, and they deserve resources. Your race should not be a barrier to law enforcement resources or media attention, nor should your zip code or gender.
And Dakara, can you talk about what your family, I mean, obviously Jelani was too old to be considered a runaway, he was an adult, but can you talk about the response your family got right away when you, or I guess your mom really, because he called your mom every day. She really had a deep idea that something was wrong, something wasn't right. Did you find the authorities to be responsive?
Not how we would have wanted. And I guess in hindsight, when you've never been through this type of situation, it seemed as if they were fully invested. It seemed as if they wanted to help. But as time goes on, we learned that there was really no sense of urgency the way we would have wanted it to be for Jelani in that time. As we all know, the first 48 hours are very vital when someone goes missing. And it was a struggle to even get them to start looking for my brother, to start looking for Jelani in the beginning, because of the fact, for one, he is an adult. And they told my mother we had to wait 48 hours before they could do any searching for him. They basically told my mom that she had to say that Jelani was under distress or could possibly hurt himself for them to even move up the search. My family's pretty close knit. Us talking, we talk all the time. Me and my siblings, me and my parents, like if I haven't talked to one of my siblings, somebody else has talked to somebody. So when Jelani wasn't responding to any of us, we knew something was wrong, because that's not normal for anybody. When my mom says contact her, we know to contact mom ASAP, no matter what age that we're at. Like, I'm 35 and my mom says call her, I call my mom. So when Jelani didn't call any of us or reply back to any of us, we knew it was serious from that very first day. The urgency for us was there, and it just wasn't reciprocated from the police.
And Derica Wilson, so what advice do you have for families in that situation to try and get the word out, get more attention from authorities, get the authorities to do what they're supposed to do?
Well, that's the point right there. We need them to step up and do what they are supposed to do. They are the gatekeepers. And as Dakara stated, you know, families don't know what to do. This is an uncharted territory for families. And of course, we're all trained, you know, if there's an emergency, something happened, you report to law enforcement. Law enforcement is supposed to work for the community. The community does not work for law enforcement. And what does it look like? It looks like enhanced training is needed for law enforcement. And we all know that when a person goes missing, the first 24 to 48 hours are the most critical moments. And they should be dedicating resources. They should be collaborating with multi-agency collaborations. They should be doing the thorough documentation, getting all the information from the family, especially when the family knows that this is out of character. And they should be relying on the community. So they have to put this information out there. Awareness is key. We know that someone out there knows something. And so what happens is, when law enforcement fails families, families have to do this work themselves. And sadly, in many cases, and I'm not sure if this was the situation for Jelani's case, but with these cases, when families are taking matters into their own hands, in the moment of their grief and looking for their loved ones, they're also being targeted for those scam and ransom, because now when law enforcement's not putting the flyers out, the families, they're putting the flyers out with their personal information on there. So it really, there needs to be There needs to be more training. That's what it goes back to. It needs to be more training. And that's something that we also step in. So, you know, we help families with the flyer distribution. We create the flyers. We were very aware of Jelani's case. We spoke with Jelani's mom early on. We created the flyers and we wanted to utilize our partnerships with local and national media to help amplify the story, because less is more, less of one race and more of everyone that's missing, greater the chances of a reunion. And we need everyone working together. That's law enforcement, that's the media, and that's the community. Families like Jelani, they deserve that.
Dakara, we have to take a break in about a minute here, but talk about that. What, I mean, this is not something that, that families have experience for, right? You're not prepared for this. What was that like for you?
Correct.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, even just like Ms. Derica said, there is no type of pre-planning experience you can have for this when you're going through it in that moment. All of us knowing how Jelani is, we were just trying to find him. And I'm pretty sure there's a couple of things that we probably should have paid attention to in that moment that we didn't, because, you know, we didn't know what to look for. We were just trying to find him. There could have been a lot of things that we have missed, a lot of things that we didn't do correctly, all because we didn't have proper guidance in the beginning. It was literally us, my mother, setting all of the groundwork, and we were just following suit to do things to find my brother. We just felt very much alone. It was just us, family and friends and people in the community that were there in the beginning. Even when we did our first search that my mom set up in Peru, Illinois, we had no police presence. We were told that they didn't have the manpower to help us search. Mm-hmm. We had to do that. We didn't know what to do. We're not professionals in looking for missing people. Mm-hmm. You know, but we tried our best. And that's all that we could do in that moment, because we were still hopeful that we would find him and find him alive.
Yeah. All right. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Please stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We have been talking about the disappearance of Illinois State University grad student Jelani Day. It happened 3 years ago this past weekend. We have been talking about the bigger picture issues around this as well with Derica Wilson, who's co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation. But we've also been talking about Jelani's story and the family's personal experience with his sister, Dakara Bolden. And we are joined now by Carmen Bolden Day, Jelani's mother. If you want to join our conversation today, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Carmen, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thank you for making the time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me.
We talked a little bit, as I like to do in these conversations, about what Jelani was like in life. I want to ask you, though, it's been 3 years, I can only begin to imagine how difficult this weekend in particular has been for you, but how are you holding up?
This week has been extremely difficult. I mean, every day is difficult, but getting up this morning and seeing reminders on my phone, it didn't help a lot. Today was the day that the flyer came out that showed that Jelani was missing. Today is the 26th. This would have been the day that I went to the campus and sat down and tried to see if I could find him, and sat down with Kara Baster, and I got assigned the police detective on today, and his car was found today.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I can only imagine. Take all the time you need.
It's like in my mind. I've been reliving today. Because there's so many things that I heard a little bit of the conversation that was taking place with my daughter prior to me getting on here. And I wasn't prepared. You can't be prepared for anything like that. I had to get up early that morning when the bank first opened, and because I was so far away. I called the credit union to see if Jelani had any activity, because I was trying to think of any and everything to do. Because it was not like him. I hadn't heard from him. You know, I got that call about 5 o'clock the night before, and it was 6 o'clock in the morning, and I still hadn't heard from him. And that wasn't like Jelani. Jelani always would respond to my text. He would respond if I sent him a text that said, call me ASAP. I don't care what he was doing. He would call me, or he would text me and let me know what he was doing that he couldn't call me. And I had not received anything from him. So in my mind, I had to try to think and figure out, because I know Jelani doesn't have any kind of health issues that would have alerted me to feel like, do I need to, you know, think about, has he passed out somewhere? I just knew that something was wrong because I hadn't heard from him. So in doing so, I was trying to think of everything that I could possibly think of, to contacting people. I had not even been asleep that night. I talked to a young lady from his class who had called a friend of my daughter's to make us aware that Jelani was missing. And in hindsight, when I go back and think back all these things that were transpiring that night, there are questions that I didn't ask. There are things that I didn't do. Things that I wish I would have done, things that I wish I would have paid attention to. But I didn't know. I didn't know.
And there's no way you could have, right? Maybe I can give you a chance to take a moment there. Derricka Wilson, let me ask you. I mean, this has got to be a common story, right? People just don't know. They're not prepared for this.
They're not. And I'm so sorry, you know, just reliving this and trying to go on with your life and what people would say, putting in perspective, the new norm. It's something that is very difficult for families. I know that the families that, you know, that were surveyed, and especially when you're not prepared. No one should ever have to prepare for this. So again, on behalf of the Black and Missing Foundation, to you and your family, you know, our heart goes out to you. We know that this is difficult.
Thank you. You know, that's one of the reasons why I am committed to, at some point, with the Jelani Day Foundation, is to partner with organizations such as yours, because there needs to be like a playbook, so to say, of when these things happen, how we can give some sort of insight to families. Because being that when I was faced with this, and how nobody, and when I say nobody, nobody took it seriously that my son was missing and that something was wrong. You know, mm-hmm. they kept wanting to say that, you know, he's a young male. You know, you know how young males are. They don't want to talk to their parents or their family. That wasn't the case with my son. He was not one that didn't want to talk to me. I don't care what Jelani was doing. If he was doing something that, you know, me as his mom, you know, we as parents, you know, our children do things. Like, Jelani smoked. I was not a fan of him smoking. So I would get on him all the time. Like, Jelani, why are you smoking? You know, I had those conversations with him. And I don't care if that's what he was doing. He would still make contact with me. He would let me know, regardless of what I felt like about it. My kids were open with me. We have that relationship. So when I was talking to the police officer the night that this initial contact was made with my oldest son to let us know that Jelani was missing, and I'm on the phone with the police officers, and DeAndre is at Jelani's apartment, and the police officer is there. And I'm telling him, you know, something's not right. I want to file a missing persons report. That night, they were very hesitant about allowing me to file the report. And I had to be so insistent of it. It wasn't until almost 11 o'clock that night that they would even take my information to file the report, which for me was unacceptable, because I'm telling you, I need you all to look for my son. I know, you know, they say that you're supposed to wait a certain amount of hours because this person may show back up. But I do feel, and this is just from my own, because of my experience in doing this, when a family is expressing this concern to the police officers or to whoever the law enforcement people are, and they know this loved one better than anybody else, the law enforcement should take that in consideration. But instead of them taking that in consideration, my son was stereotyped. He was black. He had a nice car. He's living in this nice apartment. How is he affording this? These are the kind of questions I'm asked. Instead of us focusing on he's missing, I didn't need to go back into the history of why Jelani could afford this, that me and his dad was helping him, or that he had that car because it was gifted to him. That wasn't even important. What was important is that he was missing. And instead of you focusing on him missing, you were trying to focus on what type of person he was, or what his character was, or any of that. He was missing. And that wasn't taken seriously. And that's something that law enforcement, I don't know how to bring about that change, but that's something that I feel like needs to be changed.
Let me ask that. Thank you for sharing that. And Derricka Wilson, let me ask you about that then. And first, I should remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking about the Illinois State University grad student Jelani Day, who was missing and later found deceased. It happened 3 years ago this week. And we are talking about that with Carmen Bolden Day, who's Jelani's mom, Dakara Bolden, who is his eldest sister, and Derricka Wilson, who is co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation. Derricka, talk about that. Talk about the law enforcement side of this. Are there efforts to sort of shake them up? I mean, we had a conversation on this show. There was a Pulitzer Prize awarded to a group out of Chicago called the Invisible Institute, which had done reporting on all the Black and missing, particularly young women in Chicago. Talk about what is being done on the law enforcement side of this.
Well, what's being done on the law enforcement side, you know, we've been invited into those conferences with NOBLE, the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, to speak with law enforcement on how they handle or should be handling missing person cases. But I'm also proud to share with your listeners that on Wednesday of this week, the 28th, we're going to be releasing the Law Enforcement Best Practices Guide for missing persons investigations. It is important. We know that this is an issue in our community, and this is a way for us to provide practical solutions and how law enforcement should be responding to families, approaching families with empathy and sensitivity, collaboration, and the list goes on and on. And this guide is also with the focus of the families that we've served, as well as law enforcement agencies that are doing it correctly. They can be the model for these other agencies that need enhancement and training. So that is something that is coming down the pike. And again, it's going to be available for free for law enforcement. We want them to look at their policy and procedures. No family should have to wait 24 hours before filing a missing persons report. As we stated earlier, the first 24 to 48 hours are the most critical moments. You know, we don't want to hear about the staffing issues that you have. I mean, all agencies are having staffing issues, but we're also providing viable solutions to address those staffing issues as well. So we put together this comprehensive guide. It's about 40 pages, and it's full of resources, recommendations, best practices, successes, quotes from law enforcement, from families. And we hope that this has a huge impact, especially when it comes to people of color disappearing at an alarming rate.
Derica, I understand you were a police officer yourself. Talk about the culture. What do you understand about why this happens, why it's happened so many times?
Yes, I am former law enforcement. I was the first Black female police officer for the City of Falls Church Police Department, first and only. And what I've been able to see is that our cases are not taken seriously. And we're all seeing that. It plays out day in and day out. And that was one of the reasons why I started the organization with my sister-in-law, Natalie, who's in media public relations, because those are the two professions that are needed, law enforcement and media, to amplify our cases and help law enforcement in getting information on our cases. So how we typically work, we know that there's a lack of trust when it comes to the Black and Brown community and law enforcement. And so they can't go to the community because they don't look like the community that they're serving in a lot of cases. So when we're putting information out there, we're receiving those tips that can help end the nightmare for the families that we're serving. But again, it goes back to awareness is key. It is key to get this information out there because we know that someone out there knows something. And then it's also so important that when law enforcement get this information, that they continue the investigation, because in some cases we need to fight for justice, you know, as even with Jelani's case and so many other Jelani Days that are out there. So the dynamics are really different, you know, working with law enforcement, seeing it firsthand. But I saw myself, and I know Natalie, we saw ourselves as the change. And that's what we're looking to do and continuing to do, because it's our goal for Black and Missing Foundation to die a natural death at some point. And that will happen when law enforcement, they're taking cases seriously despite race, gender, and zip code. Media is covering our stories, and our community is galvanizing to help us bring us home.
All right, we need to take another break on the program. Before we do, let me remind people we are talking about Jelani Day, his case. He went missing 3 years ago this past weekend. He was later found deceased in the Illinois River. We're talking with his mother, Carmen Bolden Day, also his sister, Dakara Bolden, and we're talking about some of the bigger picture issues that this case raises with Derica Wilson, who is co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation, which is a group that aims to raise awareness of missing people from groups that don't get wall-to-wall media coverage typically. And it also, as we've been hearing, provides resources to the families of the missing. You can join our conversation today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We're going to continue after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It has been 3 years since the Illinois State University graduate student Jelani Day went missing and was later found dead. We are talking about the difficulty his family had in trying to get law enforcement to take his missing persons case as seriously as they thought they should. And we are talking about the state of the investigation 3 years on and some of the bigger picture issues that this case raises. My guests for this conversation are Carmen Bolden Day, who is Jelani's mother, Dakara Bolden, who is the oldest sister of Jelani Day, and Derricka Wilson, who is co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation, which is a national group that aims to raise awareness and provide support for families going through situations like this. Carmen, before you were able to join us, we were hearing a little bit of an update from Dakara about where the case has gone in the time, about there was some information about the clothes. I also understand that you've been working to try and learn what you can from Jelani's phone. What has been the situation with that?
Let me say that Jelani's case, for everyone, is still open. It's still an open case. An open and active case is what they is characterized as. But the Jelani Day Joint Task Force is not actively working the case. So, of course, I've been working. The clothes that were found after the body was found on September 4th of 2021. When I quote this, as I'm quoting this from the actual police officer that advised me of this, that on September the 22nd of 2001, two bored white girls from ISU who wanted to walk their dog, drove from Bloomington to Peru, and they found Jelani's clothing. Those two bored white girls also retained lawyers. As to why, I don't know. I recently was able to find those girls here back in June, and I asked them, why did they retain lawyers? They said that they were advised from their family to do so. Their story that they gave me pertaining to the clothes and their discovery and their not willingness to speak with me differed from that of the police. So I asked those girls if they would speak with me publicly, not only for clarity for myself, but because there is I need for the Department of Justice, I need for someone to come in and provide oversight over this whole case. Those young ladies, they refused. Per one of them, she told me that she feels like she's done what God has wanted her to do, and that was to show me the area and to speak with me, and there's nothing else that she can do. I understand that people are scared or have a fear or whatever the case may be when dealing with something of the unknown. I'm scared. I have a fear. My worst fear was that was to lose one of my children. I have to face my fear every day. And for these young ladies who have said that they wanted to help me and did show me what they did and how they did it, I still have so many unanswered questions, so many things that are unanswered that I don't feel like the police even addressed. As far as his phone goes, Jelani's phone, if everybody, whoever doesn't know, his phone was found in November of 2021 on the side of a road. It was a young man that stated that, let me just say this. Everything that I've ever found out about Jelani pertaining to his phone, his car, I've not found out that news first from the police. I've had to find out this news from social media. So this even reiterates more as to why I've always had to be the one to do the footwork or the legwork in regards to my son. I found out on social media in November of 2021 that Jelani's phone was found on the side of a highway by a man that was got out of his car to fix a mattress on the top of his on the roof of his car, and he found this phone. I had to track this man down, and I had to speak to him, and he had told me that the police had actually had his phone, I want to say it was a week before I had even spoken to him, or maybe it was like 3 days. I know it was, they had it for a period of time prior to me even making contact with this man. He sold Jelani's phone at a Walmart kiosk and got $80 from it, and his phone was tracked, and that's how the police were able to retrieve the phone. So the police had in their possession Jelani's phone from that time in November until just recently in June. Back in April of last year, it's been difficult for me to do a lot of things, but each day I'm getting stronger. I was able to look at a video of Jelani, the video of when he was last seen walking campus. And when he was walking on campus, Jelani has his phone in his hand. And then while he has his phone in his hand, you see Jelani punching in his code on his phone. I rewinded that video so many times to see if I could figure out the code, because the police has had Jelani's phone for a year and a half. And they keep telling me that the equipment, but first it was the equipment that they needed to figure out the code was not updated. Then it was, it could take years for them to figure out the code because it was a 6-digit code, and they are running it through all these numbers on this phone, on this, what I'm imagining is a machine. Then I was told that the program that was used to that was needed to get the information off Jelani's phone wasn't updated. Every time I found out something, I would contact the police. When the Cellebrite information, the program that was needed to try to crack the code of his phone, when that information was updated, I immediately contacted the chief of police in Peru, and I let her know, like, hey, this program has been updated. Can you let everybody know? Instead of them looking into it, she wanted to know, Carmen, how do you know that it's updated? And I told her I did my research and I knew it and I was correct that it had been updated. But yet and still, they still hadn't unlocked his phone. But as I said, I later was able to view him on a video.
Software. You don't need the fancy security software. You just watch the video and figure out the pattern of his fingers.
Yeah. That's exactly what I did. And I called them and I asked them about the video. And I asked them, were they aware of that Jelani's punching in his coat on the video? And their response to me was, are you speaking of the video when he's on campus? And my response was, yes. Yeah, Carmen, we know about that video. And I was speechless. So I then asked them, well, he's punching his code in on there. I didn't have the capabilities of slowing the video down. I didn't have the capabilities of enlarging it. I had sent the video to my kids. We were all trying to figure it out. And I asked them if they could do that. If they could, the police, since you have this, they should have the more resources than what I was able to obtain. And Ty McCluskey told me from the Bloomington Police Department, Carmen, if you hadn't have told us to give the phone to the FBI, we would have been done unlocked the phone. So once again, everything is placed on me. I was always blamed for as to why something hasn't escalated in this case, or something they haven't done anything. And I tried to be the most cooperative, non-combative. I did everything for these people to help me. I didn't want to be this, you know, because again, there's a stereotype on Black women. There's a stereotype on Blacks, period. If I go in there and I'm loud and I'm forceful and I'm all of this, I couldn't be that way with them because I needed the help and I wasn't getting it. But then I'm being blamed because of things that I requested to be done because they had not done their job. So now I find this video and I'm asking for them to enhance it, for them to find, to slow it down. And they're telling me, okay, we will do that. We'll get the phone from the FBI, which I don't even know if the FBI had the phone. But in the process of them getting the phone and obtaining the phone, I'm still at home trying to figure out his code. So in April of 23, in April of 2023, I, along with the help of my children, were able to figure out Jelani's phone code in 10 days. Mm. 10 days. It took me 10 days to figure out his code, and they had his phone for a year and a half. When I sent them the information, they told me, they said, Carmen, if we try this so many times, you know what, it's going to block us out, and we can't do this. And so that last time I had sent them, prior to me sending the correct code, I had sent them at least, we had sent them at least maybe 15 other codes that didn't work. When we finally did figure out the correct code, Todd McCluskey said, I was gonna, mm-hmm. I'm going to try it, Carmen, but I hope it doesn't fail because I know you're going to be mad if we get locked out of this phone. And I was just like, I was praying, just do what you need to do. So when he finally did call me and the code did work, they were able to get information off of Jelani's phone. When I found that out, I felt like something, like I was like, okay, we're going to have a breakthrough, right?
Yeah, but unfortunately, not a significant breakthrough. I'm sorry to cut you off. We are so close to being out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I understand.
I apologize.
No, please. It's just the unfortunate reality of an hour-long radio program. Dakara Bolden, I want to bring you back. You've been waiting patiently. Briefly, can you just talk about how this has changed your family?
The dynamic, well, I'll start with me and my siblings. It has changed a little bit with Jelani's absence. You know, we all have our own separate personalities. We all are how we are with each other. And him not being there just leaves a huge void in how we do things, how our group texts is now versus how it used to be, how our group calls is how it used to be, just the memories of him. It's like always a daily reminder that he's not here whenever we get together. You know, we were just that tight with each other. If you saw one, you saw somebody else not too far behind. And Jelani not being around just left a huge void in our siblingship. You know, it has not been the same. And I think all of us are just trying to deal with the fact that it just will never be the same without him here. You know, he was the one, he was the loud one. We could hear Jelani coming from a mile away. He was mm-hmm. the one, you know, that would eat everybody's food. He was the loud, playful one. And like, you know how everybody has their roles. Jelani had his role and, you know, and can't none of us feel Jelani's role, you know?
Yeah. Well, Dakara
will forever be different.
Yeah. Well, Dakara Bolden and Carmen Bolden Day, I'm again so sorry for your loss. Thank you for sharing your time and stories with us, and I hope you and your family find whatever peace is available to you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for having us. We really appreciate it.
And I also want to thank Derica Wilson, who is the co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation. Thank you for joining us today on the program. We'll have links to both the Jelani Day Foundation and the Black and Missing websites at our website, which is 21stshow.org. That is all the time for our program today. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.